We're starting Chapter 7 of Pride and Prejudice. Mr. Bennet's property consisted almost entirely of an estate of 2,000 a year, which, unfortunately for his daughters, was entailed, in default of heirs male, on a distant relation. And their mother's fortune, though ample for her situation in life, could but ill supply the deficiency of his. Her father had been an attorney in Meryton, and had left her £4,000. She had a sister, married to Mr. Phillips, who had been a clerk to their father and succeeded him in the business, and a brother settled in London in the respectable line of trade. The village of Longbourn was only 1 mile from Meryton, a most convenient distance for the young ladies, who were usually tempted thither 3 or 4 times a week to pay their duty to their aunt and to a milliner's shop just over the way. The two youngest of the family, Catherine and Lydia, were particularly frequent in their attentions. Their minds were more vacant than their sisters, and when nothing better offered, a walk to Meryton was necessary to amuse their morning hours and furnish conversation for the evening, and however bare of news the country in general might be, they always contrived to learn something from their aunt. At present, indeed, they were both well supplied with news and happiness by the recent arrival of the militia regiment in the neighborhood. It was to remain the whole winter, and Meryton was the headquarters. Their interests to Mrs. Phillips were now productive of the most interesting intelligence. Every day added something to their knowledge of the officers' names and connections. Their lodgings were not long a secret, and at length they began to know all the officers themselves. Mr. Phillips visited them all, and this opened to his nieces a store of felicity unknown before. They could talk of nothing but officers, and Mr. Bingley's large fortune, the mention of which gave animation to their mother, was worthless in their eyes when opposed to the regimentals of an ensign. After listening one morning, do you like a man in uniform as well?
I'd rather have a rich gentleman.
Fair enough. After listening one morning to their effusions on the subject, Mr. Bennet coolly observed, "From all that I can collect by your manner of talking, you must be two of the silliest girls in the country. I have suspected it some time, but I am now convinced." Catherine was disconcerted and made no answer, but Lydia, with perfect indifference, continued to express her admiration of Captain Carter and her hope of seeing him in the course of the day, as he was going the next morning to London. "I am astonished, my dear," said Mrs. Bennet, "that you should be so ready to think your own children silly. If I wish to think slightingly of anybody's children, it should not be of my own, however." "If my children are silly, I must hope to always be sensible of it." "Yes, but as it happens, they are all of them very clever." "This is the only point, I flatter myself, on which we do not agree. I had hoped that our sentiments coincided in every particular, but I must so far differ from you as to think our two youngest daughters uncommonly foolish." "My dear Mr. Bennet, you must not expect such girls to have the sense of their father and mother. When they get to our age, I dare say they will not think about officers any more than we do. I remember the time when I liked a red coat myself very well, and indeed, I still do at my heart. And if a very smart young colonel with 5 or 6 thousand a year should want one of my girls, I shall not say nay to him. And I thought Colonel Forster looked very becoming the other night at Sir Williams's in his regimentals."
"I thought it was Foster."
Forster. I think I pronounced it Foster.
"No, I think you pronounced it right. I just thought it was
Forster.
No, I believe you're reading it right.
No, it might be pronounced Foster. I don't know.
No, it's not. It's not. I just always thought it was.
I see. Okay. "Mama," cried Lydia, "my aunt says that Colonel Forster and Captain Carter do not so often go to Miss Watson's as they did when they first came. She sees them now very often standing in Clark's library." Mrs. Bennet was prevented replying by the entrance of the footman with a note for Miss Bennet, and it came from Netherfield, and the servant waited for an answer. Mrs. Bennet's eyes sparkled with pleasure, and she was eagerly calling out while her daughter read, "Well, Jane, who's it from? What is it about? What does he say? Well, Jane, make haste and tell us. Make haste, my love." "It is from Miss Bingley," said Jane, and then read it aloud. "My dear friend, if you are not so compassionate as to dine today with Louisa and me, We shall be in danger of hating each other for the rest of our lives, and for a whole day's tête-à-tête between two women can never end without a quarrel. Come as soon as you can on receipt of this. My brother and the gentleman are to dine with the officers. Yours ever, Caroline Bingley. Is it Caroline or Carolyn?
Caroline.
That's what I thought. With the officers, cried Lydia. I wonder my aunt did not tell us of that. Dining out, said Mrs. Bennet. That is very unlucky. Can I have the carriage? Said Jane. No, my dear, you'd better go on horseback, because it seems likely to rain, and then you must stay all night. That would be a good scheme, said Elizabeth, if you were sure they would not offer to send her home. Oh, but the gentleman will have Mr. Bingley's chaise to go to Meryton, and the Hursts have no horses to theirs. I'd much rather go in the coach. But, my dear, your father cannot spare the horses, I'm sure. They are wanted in the farm, Mr. Bennet, are they not? They are wanted in the farm much oftener than I can get them, he said. But if you have got them today, said Elizabeth, my mother's purpose will be answered. She did at last extort from her father an acknowledgment that the horses were engaged. Jane was therefore obliged to go on horseback, and her mother attended her to the door with many cheerful prognostics of a bad day. Her hopes were answered. Jane had not been gone long before it rained hard. The sisters were uneasy for her, but her mother was delighted. The rain continued the whole evening without intermission. Jane certainly could not come back. I love that her mom wants her to stay over at the guy's house. I mean, obviously there are, like, people over and it's proprietary, you know, it's proper.
They don't even have sex, but she just wants her in front of him.
I know, but it's so funny. Like, can you imagine your mother doing that?
What if you lived in a mansion?
This was a lucky idea of mine indeed, said Mrs. Bennet, more than once, as if the credit of making it rain were all her own. Till the next morning, however, she was not aware of the felicity of her contrivance. Breakfast was scarcely over when a servant from Netherfield brought forth the following note for Elizabeth. My dearest Lizzie, I find myself very unwell this morning, which, I suppose, is to be imputed of my getting wet through yesterday. My kind friends will not hear of my returning till I am better. They insist also of my seeing Mr. Jones. Therefore, do not be alarmed if you should hear of his having been to me, and, excepting a sore throat and headache, there is not much the matter with me. Yours, etc. Well, my dear, said Mr. Bennet, when Elizabeth had read the note out loud, if your daughter should have a dangerous fit of illness, if she should die, it would be a comfort to know that it was all in pursuit of Mr. Bingley and under your orders. Oh, I'm not afraid of her dying. People do not die of little trifling colds. She will be taken good care of. As long as she stays there, it is all very well. I would go and see her if I could have the carriage. Elizabeth, feeling really anxious, was determined to go to her, though no carriage was to be had, and as she was no horsewoman, walking was her only alternative. She declared her resolution. How can you be so silly, cried her mother, as to think of such a thing in all this dirt? You will not be fit to be seen when you get there. I shall be very fit to see Jane, which is all I want, she said. Is this a hint to me, Lizzie, said her father, to send for the horses? No, indeed, I do not wish to avoid the walk. The distance is nothing when one has a motive. Only 3 miles. I shall be back by dinner. I admire the activity of your benevolence, observed Mary, but every impulse of feeling should be guided by reason, and in my opinion, exertion should always be in proportion to what is required. We will go as far as Meryton with you, said Catherine and Lydia. Elizabeth accepted their company, and the three young ladies set off together. If we make haste, said Lydia as they walked along, perhaps we may see something of Captain Carter before he goes. In Meryton they parted. The two youngest repaired to the lodgings of one of the officers' wives, and Elizabeth continued to walk alone, crossing field after field at a quick pace, jumping over stiles and springing over puddles with impatient activity, finding herself at last within view of the house, with weary ankles, dirty stockings, and a face glowing with the warmth of exercise. She was shown into the breakfast parlor where all but Jane were assembled, and where her appearance created a great deal of surprise. That she should have walked 3 miles so early in the day, in such dirty weather, and by herself, was almost incredible to Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley, and Elizabeth was convinced that they held her in contempt for it. She was received, however, very politely by them, and in their brother's manners there was something better than politeness. There was good humor and kindness. Mr. Darcy said very little, and Mr. Hurst nothing at all. The former was divided between admiration of the brilliancy which exercise has given her complexion, and doubt as to the occasions justifying her coming so far alone. The latter was thinking only of his breakfast. Her inquiries after her sister were not very favorably answered. Miss Bennet had slept ill, and though up, was very feverish, and not well enough to leave her room. Elizabeth was glad to be taken to her immediately, and Jane, who had only been withheld by the fear of giving alarm or inconvenience from expressing in her note how much she longed for such a visit, was delighted at her entrance. She was not equal, however, to much conversation, and when Miss Bingley left them together, could attempt little besides expression of gratitude for the extraordinary kindness she was treated with. Elizabeth silently attended her. When breakfast was over, they were joined by the sisters, and Elizabeth began to like them herself when she saw how much attention and affection and solicitude they showed for Jane. The apothecary came, and having examined his patient, said, as might be supposed, that she had caught a violent cold, and that they must endeavor to get the better of it, advised her to return to bed, and promised her some draughts. The advice was followed readily, for the feverish symptoms increased, and her head ached acutely. Elizabeth did not quit her room for a moment, nor were the other ladies often absent. The gentlemen being out, they had, in fact, nothing else to do. When the clock struck three, Elizabeth felt that she must go, and very unwillingly said so. Miss Bingley offered her the carriage, and she only wanted a little pressing to accept it. When Jane testified such concern in parting with her, that Miss Bingley was obliged to convert the offer of the chaise to an invitation to remain at Netherfield for the present. Elizabeth most thankfully consented, and a servant was dispatched to Longbourn to acquaint the family with her stay and bring back a supply of clothes. And that's the end of chapter 7. I think we'll stop there. I love you very much, my sweet kitten. Sleep well, beautiful kitten.